Like, that is the long and the short of it, is how did we break our website? We broke our website because I did not pick the right person to lead that revamp process. And so I think there is a double-edged sword, right, where it's like, hey, if you have this really capable software that can do a lot and it's very flexible and it's very powerful, well, with that power and that flexibility comes the ability to literally shoot yourself in the foot. And we did that admirably. We absolutely just wrecked our website.
Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to Inside Woo, a Do the Woo podcast show. We are picking up on episodes again via Inside Woo. In the past, we've highlighted team members at WooCommerce and shared some conversations. Moving forward, we will be continuing to get an inside look at WooCommerce. These will be coming from several different directions, both internally and externally from Woo. This return to our show has Jay Walsh sharing a great conversation, including Woo's Travis Lima, Customer Success Manager, and CEO Paul Majorana, with Woo Merchant and Client Douglas Costello from Wormwood Gaming. The chat is fun and both fascinating and insightful. So let's listen in.
I'm Jay. On the communications and marketing side, I've got Paul Majorana, who's the CEO of Woo. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Jay.
Hello. And I've got Travis from the Woo Customer Success team. And Paul, you're on the East Coast of the US, and Travis, you are based in?
Yeah, I'm based in Port Elizabeth, South Africa. That's right.
Very nice. And I'm here in Northern California. And on the call for our first kind of episode, we wanted to talk to an amazing Woo merchant that we're going to dive right into. And we've got Douglas from Wormwood Gaming.
There we go.
Yeah, makers of, I would argue, some of the most coveted and beautiful furniture relating to tabletop gaming I've ever seen.
Yes.
I know people who will think I'm touching a celebrity here or contacting, because so many people love what you guys do. Douglas, you're the founder and creator of Wormwood and one of the co-founders. We're so excited to have you here. And tell us where you're based.
So I am based in the great state of Massachusetts, Taunton, Massachusetts, born and raised, and I never managed to get away as hard as I tried. And so I built a company here.
That is awesome. So we're going to want to dig in and hear a little bit about the company, but and we'll have a few questions because you have an interesting story about Wormwood Gaming. And it's one of the most successful Kickstarter companies that's been involved in Kickstarter for a long time. So we'd love to hear a little bit about that. But for the most part, I'm going to sort of sit back and let the three of you all chat. But maybe, Douglas, you could tell us a little bit, start us out. Tell us a little bit about Wormwood Gaming, how it came about, just sort of the history story of how it became this force that it is today.
Yeah, so let's see. About 10 years ago, Wormwood Gaming became a more serious venture. It actually started out as an Etsy shop. Well, actually, let me actually back up slightly even before that. My brother and I had just failed to start a woodworking business. We went into custom furniture making, and that is an extremely difficult business to be in, mainly because it's hard to find clients that are willing to sort of fork out the money to afford heirloom quality custom one of a kind furniture.
Yeah.
And so really what we did is we decided, well, what we're going to do is we're going to take that skill set of being able to make heirloom grade furniture, and we're going to instead aim it towards the tabletop gaming market. So I'm talking about nerds, geeks, gamers of all kinds. And we're going to make a small item that can ship anywhere in the world, right? So we're going to be able to actually, you know, because actually transportation in furniture is a major, major headache. It's a major thing you have to overcome. So anyway, we developed a small line of tabletop accessories. So these would be little knickknacks for to enhance your gaming experience. And we grabbed a smartphone, made a Kickstarter video, and we put out some of our products on Kickstarter, and it absolutely took off. The first Kickstarter video, it was me and one of my co-founders, Ed, with a smartphone in my garage. And you know, we sold a couple thousand units on Kickstarter, and it was like $100,000. Whoa. And, you know, at the time, that was absolutely like, you know, that was crazy. Absolutely unexpected. And so then we struggled and we delivered those. And then we did another Kickstarter for, and then another, and then another. And we slowly built a manufacturing company. And now we have 150 employees in two states. And yeah, it was totally vertically integrated. So we design the products, we manufacture the products, we, you know, manage our website, we do our own marketing. We're actually pretty successful in that regard, which is maybe how some of the folks have, you know, have heard about us with the, you know, talking about quasi celebrity stuff. That's just, that's also us. And yeah, we do it all full stack from wood to selling it to shipping it.
And I have to assume you had a sort of a background in tabletop gaming just as like a player or hobbyist first, or did you sort of see an opportunity to kind of apply your woodworking skill set to something new?
No. So my brother had a much deeper, he's one of the other co-founders. So it's the three of us. It's myself, a childhood friend, who's also sort of a gamer. I was a gamer and he was a gamer. And then my brother, Ian, who's also a co-founder, was more on the woodworking side, although I did go into a woodworking apprenticeship with him for a while. I got fired very quickly from that. I didn't actually last. Yeah, it was sort of like, hey, you know, we have this heirloom skill set. Can we apply it to a hobby that we really enjoy? And so it was sort of that, the Venn diagram crossover of heirloom furniture had not hit the tabletop gaming scene. Sort of that intersection point and the ability we were able to ship worldwide because we had made something small was really the recipe for success. It was just the market was ready for that.
That's right. Yeah.
Because, you know, the nerds were growing up, right?
They have disposable income now. Right.
Exactly. You know, that nerdy kid in your class that sort of was sitting playing D&D with his buddies at the lunch table, you know, he's a doctor now, or he's a software engineer.
Millions of those people. Right, exactly. Yeah.
And by the way, I was that kid at that lunch table, right? Only instead of becoming a doctor, I learned how to do, you know, my brother and I learned how to do high-end woodworking. So we just sort of naturally applied that skill set. So it was very organic. You know, there's no business plan. I've never written a business plan. I have no business being in business, really, other than the will, I suppose. And yeah, that is how I ended up here.
And can you remind me what you may have mentioned? What year did that all start? Like when did your sort of first like Kickstarter, I guess?
Oh, the first Kickstarter. Oh, let me look that up. I actually am not totally sure. So by the way, when it comes to Kickstarter, while I look this up, we're probably in the top 10 Kickstarter companies of all time, meaning we've raised many tens of millions of dollars through the Kickstarter platform, that's how we funded the growth of the manufacturing. So we don't have, you know, in software, it's a lot about, oh, you get VC and funding and you go through all these rounds. We don't do any of that. We just are funded directly by our customers. And so Kickstarter does two things. A, will prove the product, right? So if you have a product people want, well, you're going to know they want it on because they're buying it. So it not only proves the product, it then also gives you the funding so that you can produce the product. So it's solving two things. It's proving a product fit, and it's also giving you funding. And so that's, I mean, and by the way, manufacturing, it's an expensive game to get into.
Sure.
It's extremely capital intensive. So, you know, $4 million worth of machinery, maybe $5 million. And that's in order to run what I still consider a small furniture manufacturing. Yeah, eventually we did get into furniture. Sorry to jump around a little bit. We did eventually get into furniture. And so now we do not just small accessories worldwide. We also do furniture. Although furniture, we haven't cracked furniture worldwide yet. But the shipping and logistics is extremely challenging. Because we sell physical goods. We're not like you guys.
Actually, let's talk about that. I'd love to learn a little bit more about, you know, you guys built this incredible, you know, custom furniture. It's beautiful. Can you talk a little bit about what that process looks like, you know, when a customer hits, you know, purchase and like, you know, what happens behind the scenes from there and how you get the product built, configured, and actually into your customer's hands?
Yeah. So, by the way, so we launched the first Kickstarter in October of 2013. So late 2013.
A little more than 10 years in. Wow, what a journey. Incredible. Congrats.
Yeah.
Actually, before we go to the shipping, I actually did want to ask a little bit about, do you continue to leverage Kickstarter as a platform? Or is that something now that you've built an audience, like I imagine you could do sort of pre-orders and get to an effective similar position as you had leveraged Kickstarter?
Yeah, right now. So right now we are still on the, we're on the quest to profitability, right? So manufacturing is a volume game. So you know, the last dollar produced in manufacturing is the sweetest, right? So you're kind of, every unit you're pushing out, you're losing money, because, you know, it's expensive to run a factory. Eventually, when you have enough volume, then yes, then you start to hit profitability. So in terms of Kickstarter, we still do use Kickstarter. We are planning on continuing to use Kickstarter because it's an excellent way for us to basically get new customers, really. And we're quite good at them at this point. Also, just to throw it out there, it's still a superior funding model, right? Because, you know, you're essentially getting interest-free loans from the clients. And so that can help, you know, when it comes to capital expenditure.
Like, sure. Fund inventory, yeah, investments in manufacturing, all of that.
The whole nine yards. And so, you know, I have a love relationship with it. Some folks in the company have some people have a love-hate relationship with it. It really is a very, very compelling way to sell products. And what we may do is we may transition from sort of use Kickstarter more for the smaller accessories and transition pretty much all the furniture to just the straight up furniture line there. So anyway, the one downside of Kickstarter is when you launch a Kickstarter, you don't know how well it's going to do.
Right.
Right. So imagine having a company where every, you know, either 3 or 6 months, you're just sort of rolling a die on the craps table and you want to, you know, it's like sometimes, like, we've had Kickstarters that have raised millions and millions and millions of dollars. We've had Kickstarters that go bust.
Yeah. I'd love to learn a little bit more. Yeah. About kind of the process behind the scenes. You had talked a little bit in the Wormlike video about how, you know, you want your website to do things, right? And it's custom and you're talking to your other production systems and all of this stuff. And I'm super curious about all of that. Plus, again, kind of the actual just logistics of getting your products into people's hands.
So I am not, oh gosh, I'm not the person to talk to about half. It's funny, you know, I do have some observations concerning a lot of these things and specifically WooCommerce and that sort of thing. So first of all, you know, I am, I guess, ultimately the decision maker, and I have no clue how hardly any of this works, right? I'm a manufacturer. I'm, you know, I know a bit about marketing. I know how to tell a good story. I don't know anything about websites. And what's interesting to me in the company is people have these opinions. Like, I don't know, like this Shopify thing, which is, you know, and that's why we were talking. Like, why is it? This is what's curious to me is like, why is it? And it was really the non-technical people. It's like the marketing guys, the media guys, right? The non-technical guys are all like, oh, we're having website issues. Let's switch to Shopify.
You characterized it well, right? Is that if you're just looking for a sort of something simple and easy to do, Shopify meets those needs like very well, right? But if you have more complex buying experiences or, you know, again, connections to backend systems, that's where Woo tends to shine.
Yeah. So it's funny, the technical folks were actually kind of like, they're like, yeah, they had no issue with Woo. Like, they're like, nope, actually all the tools are here. We can actually make this work with Woo. In fact, we've already done a bunch of work on the website. It would be a big pain in the dick to actually switch it over to Shopify. So it's funny, like within my company, that was the sort of the debate that was going on, is you had, you know, the technical people that know what they're doing wanted to stay the course and actually fix the website. There's a story, we can actually go into it, because that's also, it's like, how did we fuck up the website, right? It's a good, like, that's my question, right? My question is, at the end of the day, like, and there is a story there. But anyway, just to round this out, it's funny, the technical staff were kind of, hey, stay the course, fix the current website. There's nothing magical about Shopify. Meanwhile, the creatives and the web, the graphic design side, those folks who don't know anything about websites, as far as I can tell, they were like, yeah, just switch to Shopify because I guess I saw the ad and it looks really sweet. And I've heard, you know, like, I'm just saying, it was actually fascinating from my point of view where these people even got these opinions. And that's, by the way, your team, just to, you know, give some love to Travis, like, I don't know. You guys, once you guys actually knew that it was wrong, you sent in like
the SWAT team.
Yeah, the SWAT team to like come in and kick down the door, and you know, and you guys actually fixed it within like a week or two. So actually, thank you for that, Travis. I actually think you guys actually, I don't know. Once that happened, I was like, oh, I was like, let's stick with this. Like, I'm not interested in reinventing the wheel, right? I'm not in the website building business.
It's a tool to acquire customers, deliver your product. Exactly. It's, you need to be focused on exactly those things, not the internals of how your website works.
Right. And honestly, and feel free, I'm sorry, I'm monologuing here, but I think it is interesting. You know, I'm just giving you honest feedback. Really, the core of it is I had a very inexperienced, non-technical project manager manage a website relaunch, and he fucked it up. Like, that is the long and the short of it, is how did we break our website? We broke our website because I did not pick the right person to lead that revamp process. And so now maybe that is a criticism. I mean, I think there is a double-edged sword, right? Where it's like, hey, you know, if you have this really capable software that can do a lot and it's very flexible and it's very powerful, well, with that power and that flexibility comes the ability to literally
great responsibility
shoot yourself in the foot. And we did that admirably. We did it admirably. We absolutely just wrecked our website.
Now, it's so funny that you like that. There's a part in the Worm Life video. Again, we sort of covered some of this, and I actually clipped that piece and shared it with our entire company because it's so perfectly encapsulated both the opportunities we have as a business and platform, but also the challenges. Like, you know, again, we talked a little bit before we started recording here. I've been in the WordPress community for 13 years and maybe a little bit longer, at least working at Automattic for 13 years now. And for much of that time, I have sort of relied on that Spider-Man quote of with great power comes great responsibility. But absolutely, that's, you know, that is our problem to solve as a WordPress community, WooCommerce, right? We want to enable our merchants to have the you know, great power that is WordPress and WooCommerce in terms of flexibility and be able to build exactly the experience that they want to build. But we do make it too easy for people to shoot themselves in the foot as well.
I don't know how you square that circle. I mean, it seems almost axiomatic at a certain point, right? Like, if you empower people, you empower people to fuck up, right? You know, I'm in a very fast-growing manufacturing company, and we fuck up a lot. And it's because we're fast-growing. And, you know, and because I have to empower people and I hate committees and I hate, you know, decision by committee and I like empowerment. And so anyway, like, you know, I wasn't actually that, you know, when things went wrong with the website, personally, I felt as if like, yes, if Shopify, if I could have hacked a quick solution that could have been as capable, I would have. And I was ready to pull that trigger if Travis and his team hadn't come in and actually made it right. I probably would have pulled that trigger. I don't believe in weight loss pills. I don't believe in magic bullets, right? I don't believe that if we did go to and this is the problem, right? When you're in a problem like that, you know, when you're in this situation where these websites are complex and expensive and all this, if it was as simple as just going to Shopify and I could flip a switch and be like, oh, it's all better, then yeah, maybe I would. But that's not how life works in my experience. And luckily, I have technical people on staff that, you know, were like, hey, Doug, there's no magic bullet out there. Like, some of this shit is hard and it takes time and effort to fix things and make things better. So stay the course. And so we're staying the course and go for it.
Yeah. And I'm glad we were able to help do that. Maybe Travis, not to get too in the weeds, but maybe you can share a little bit of color around sort of some of the challenges that we found and the kind of recourse we took to get the site back to running smoothly and highly performant and all those things.
Yeah. So a couple of weeks ago, myself and a few of our solution architect, we met with Dom and Mike. Dom is, if I'm remembering correctly, Doug, he's the sort of newly appointed developer on the site who's helping you get everything squared away and sorted out. But essentially, we helped Dom identify and also confirm some of his assumptions that, you know, the foundation of the site had that we could improve upon. A lot of things were optimization related, as well as just adding in a APM that would allow us to know exactly what's going on with the site, diagnose the problem, and then either remove those little tidbits or add, you know, whatever else to improve it. So some scripts were running that didn't have to be running. We got rid of those. And just, it sounds as if Dom found a lot of value in just having technical minded folks to bounce ideas with and just confirm, you know, I want to go this way. I need to get from point A to point B. This is my thinking of how we'd like to get there. What do you think? Is that the best way? And then, you know, we can just confirm things. So, but Douglas, it was really interesting. We've got a lot of Wormwood Gaming fans, and that's actually how we stumbled across Worm Life.
I was wondering how that happened.
Yes.
I just want you to know.
Tell that story too, yeah.
Well, when I made that first video, like, okay, so we have a vlog. So, you know, and this is just part of being in the modern direct consumer economy, right, is consumer. Yeah. Anyway, we don't have to, that'll be another whole separate conversation. And yeah, we were dealing, you know, we think one thing that's really engaging and is really great content is showing problems. People love to see problems. And then people like to, you know, see how these problems resolve and the conflicts and the people having different opinions about how these problems are resolved. So what we did is we turned our entire company into part of the marketing of our company, where, you know, the idea is, hey, we're going to, manufacturing's hard. We're going to tell our story. That's the advantage. Like, you know, what is one advantage of domestic U.S. manufacturing? Is we have a big shop full of problems, right? That we're not outsourcing our problems. We've got all our problems. And so, hey, let's make some lemonade out of these lemons. People love to see problems. We've got a lot of problems. Sounds like a great reality TV show. And so, yeah, so we released these vlogs, and one of them was about our website issues. And yeah, I don't know. There must have been some fans within your organization or something. Because the response was immediate. You guys swooped right in and it was like, wow.
Sure, sure.
I guess they saw it. We didn't tag you or anything. It wasn't a takedown. We weren't trying to, you know, create drama between anybody.
And how did that happen, Travis? Is there somebody, like, are there folks at our team who subscribe to the channel?
Yeah, so there's a couple of folks who obviously follow Wormwood Gaming, and they purchased some products from you, Douglas. And what happened was, I think it was November of last year, there was an initial video that came up on my radar that I think your thumbnail was "Our website sucks." Someone reached out to my team and said, "Hey, I'm a wormling, if I'm not mistaken." Okay, cool. So this was John Coy. He said, "I'm a wormling. I've been following Wormwood for a long time. It looks like they are running WordPress and Woo, but they're running into some issues." And that was the start of a bit of an email back and forth. I believe Ed figured out the problem in that specific case. But then when it resurfaced again, and that particular video, I believe, was called "Doug is Pissed. Our website is..." something like that. So that's when we realized, okay, this is, you know, we're on strike 2 year that we need to sort out and try, you know, make a connection. That was shared within our water cooler Slack channels. And that's how we knew, okay, we have to make a move here. We were almost on the verge of rocking up at your manufacturing warehouse, knocking on the door and being like, "Hey, Douglas, we are WooCommerce. How can we help?"
Can I tell you a real issue? Like, this is actually something, you know, this is something you should be aware of. I receive endless emails from all these sorts of folks. "Hey, you want to get a new website? Blah, blah." Like, I'm always getting pitch. I think you probably reached out to me. Maybe you got through Ed. I have seen your emails coming in, Travis. And I was just like, "Oh, it's another pitch." I actually had, there's actually a little bit of a loose connection there where I, as a decision maker, I have a hard time understanding, like, hey, these are internal people at Woo. And this is different than, you know, the endless pitches I get. Because I get, especially because we're a little bit well known on social media. It's actually kind of hard to differentiate these things. And so I don't know if you guys in turn, anyway, that's a challenge you guys should, you know, look into, because I actually think that was part of why things got so bad. Actually, I'm going to one more very, very brief monologue. So brief. I just want to actually thank you guys. Let me take you in the way back machine. I don't know if this may be a rather typical journey for a customer. It's like, we grew up with your software. Like, we grew up, it was like literally, you know, myself and Ed Moranville, absolutely zero technical background, zero, just completely amateurs, were able to get a website. I think we might have contracted a little bit with someone on Fiverr. It was like, for super short money, we got a website, we got an e-commerce site running, and we did hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of business, right? And we had invested up until that point probably $2,000 on the website. Like, the thing was like, literally, it's actually kind of amazing, you know, because remember, I'm coming from a furniture world. I mean, back in the day, they used to have these things called stores. And to have a furniture store,
you'd be spending a lot more than a couple $1,000s. Yeah.
Right. So it's actually amazing. Like, it really is, you know, yes. And then I think this is part of what got us into trouble, is we had underinvested in the website for so long. We had underinvested for such a long period of time. Then I'm like, hey, let's make things better. And then I appointed the wrong person to lead that effort. And that's actually when things went sideways. So anyway, and by the way, we were asking the website over those years to do more and more and more. So there was sort of a feature creep on the website, and that coupled with poor project management during a relaunch is how we got torpedoed. That might be helpful for you guys to just have that input.
It's super helpful. We've definitely seen, you know, similar stories. I think the, like, you know, and it kind of comes back to that, you know, sort of following best practices and being a responsible sort of website owner, right? But there's a, you know, I think that WordPress and WooCommerce can scale to really meet any needs, but we often do see folks, yeah, it's kind of, you know, you're building, you may start with a solid foundation, but keep adding more and more additions, right? That eventually the house starts to kind of close in on itself a little bit. And that, again, that's not necessarily because WooCommerce or WordPress can't handle that scale or volume of traffic or whatever, or your custom needs. But sometimes it could be helpful after a decade of kind of, you know, making additions to kind of come back and say, all right, maybe, like, you know, if we were building this from scratch today, how would we approach it? Knowing what we know now, what are, you know, the company's goals are today, not what they were 10 years ago, right? And I think, unfortunately, you know, like, this was a great news in this case, and that we were able to actually make contact with you all and help get things corrected. But we often see people kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater, unfortunately, and say, oh, this is like, it's a WordPress problem, and just, you know, and not realize that, again, their WordPress or WooCommerce can absolutely meet your needs, but may have just gone about it in kind of not the best way to do that.
The thing about tech is, you know, back in the day, it used to be, you know, people that were into tech were technical, right? And so, and what we've seen is, I think, and I'm guilty of this, like, when I was back in, like, college, like, I was sort of into computers and I built my own computer and I was this big nerd, right? Still am a nerd in many regards. But at a certain point, when it comes to the apps and the smartphone, everything's simple. Everything is simple. And so I think one of the challenges is that I think that that viewpoint or that ethic, you almost think, hey, it's a website, this should be simple. Like, why is a website complicated and difficult? This should actually be simple. And then it turns out it's not simple. And I don't have a lot of experience. I'm talking a little bit out of place. Yes, but if it's simple, is it capable? Is it actually powerful? Is it actually able to do complex tasks? And I think that's probably where Shopify would fall down. Now, I don't know that. It just, that sort of logically made sense. And when the most technical members of the team that had the most real knowledge advised me, I listened. In fact, I think the reason we got fucked up was that we weren't listening to the technical leads, right? We were sort of letting, you know, we were making website, and I think this is totally most likely common. The project manager went wrong is he was listening to artists, the designers. It was sort of like an aesthetic first viewpoint. And I think that is where we went sideways, you know, and then when I took over this project, and now, you know, and by the way, unfortunately, this project manager did not survive. His career did not survive the flub up. So then when I got installed into this, I said, look, we're going to have a tech first viewpoint on web. We've got to, this is a tool. The tool has to work. I don't care what it looks like. You know, yes, when the website relaunch happened, the site did look better, but it was non-functional. Well, that doesn't help anybody. So anyway, sorry. Yeah, just a little bit more background on that.
I find, and I think maybe our merchants in particular might find this interesting or widely within our community, that Douglas, the way that you've approached both Kickstarter and social media, and you talked a little bit about looking at, you know, your business as a kind of a reality show, right? Like creating a real a phenomenon in that sense, which I know many people would be like, how do I do that? I want that. I'm curious if you have any thoughts about the inherent challenge. I mean, you're obviously a very distinct personality, but yeah, any thoughts or recommendations for folks who are like, how do I light that fire?
I have, in certain very rare circumstances, reviewed marketing material before it goes out. So I believe, right? So for instance, we run a vlog. I do not pre-watch those vlogs. I watch it when everyone else watches it. The media folks, right? Our media team, and different organizations probably call them different things, right? But there's content creators. Those content creators want to take the risk. They want to do the thing. They want to push the envelope if they're good, right? That's what you want. You want them to be hungry. You want them to be daring. You want them to make a splash, right? We're trying to make a splash. So I let them play in the water. They go nuts. Like, I do not preview, say, if you look at our vlog, I don't preview it. And they may, you know, and there's stuff that I'm like, I wish I'd reined that in a little, because, you know, it's high risk. And so I think one of the things that makes it so organizations are unsuccessful in media and marketing is you get too much top level brass involvement, right? There's too much concern about brand alignment and like all these things. And it's kind of bullshit. Nobody cares except for you guys in the boardroom, but you know, that's not what people want to watch. And so you've really got to have a reckless level of empowerment in order to be successful. I mean, that's why solo creators, right? It's like, why is it that, you know, social media creators, they'll just be some kid with a smartphone and he's outperforming your multi-billion dollar company, but, right? And it's because that kid has no inhibitions. He does not give a fuck. Right? Like, he doesn't. Right. And so if you want to try to ride that wave, you got to have to, you know, you got to get on the surfboard.
Just a true creative force. Right.
you got to risk a wipeout. Right. Like, you've got to be willing, and giving up that control is difficult for a lot of C-suite folks, I think. And, you know, you know, just to rattle over, just for people that aren't familiar, our Instagram probably has around 600,000 followers, something like that. Our YouTube channel has over 100,000. You know, we get millions of impressions. It's very popular. It's very popular. And it's because the team has been empowered to the point of what I think a lot of people would consider like almost recklessness. Because that's what it calls for, right? Now, manufacturing, that's not how we treat safety on the floor, okay? Right? We're dealing with big machines. People can really get hurt, right? Like, you can actually, like, right? And by the way, you know, like, a bad day to me isn't, and I think this is just because we come from different worlds, like, a bad day for me isn't, oh, our vlog got us into trouble, or look at these mean things these people are saying online. A bad day to me is like, yes, somebody lost a piece of their body. I'm being real. Like, I am in manufacturing, and manufacturing is actually, it's the world of atoms. It's the world of people.
Yeah, right. Stakes are high.
I try to just keep things in perspective that, you know, everything online is all fun and games and fuddy-duddy, and, you know, it's not a contact sport. And so I think, I don't know, having a little perspective, understanding it's not the end of the world if, you know, people think the wrong thing about you one way or another at this time or that time. I think that's what hamstrings a lot of, like, caring too much at a certain point becomes a liability when it comes to this sort of thing. And you, by the way, also, just to throw it out there, I'm a direct-to-consumer company, right? I am direct-to-consumer, and so I am trying to impact those consumers online by getting my stuff in front of them and telling the story and engaging them. I think different businesses are different, right? I mean, if the business is not direct-to-consumer, then it's a different, you know, you guys are B2B. So I don't know how applicable this is in your world. You know, I think the B2B world is very different than the B2C world. And so, you know, you don't want to take a successful lesson in one realm and then transpose it into another realm. So I'm, you know, actually, I mean, I'm curious. I mean, those would be questions I have for you guys is like, how do you play the B2B game? Like, that's actually interesting to me is like, how are you? Yeah, I mean, it's just such an interesting challenge. I mean, I have all sorts of questions, you know, just because I'm a curious guy in terms of like, you know, the distribution of you guys probably have a bunch of, you know, there's probably large accounts or whales and then a lot of minnows. And like, how do you, what are like strategically is the goal to bring in more minnows or to go catch more whales, right? Like, there's a lot of interesting questions here that are totally not necessarily part of this conversation, but
yeah. But it's interesting. Yeah. Like, you know, you talked about how you sort of grown up with WordPress as a business, right? And we definitely see that sort of trajectory where folks start small, even just as like a hobbyist with a blog and find a bit of a niche and scale that business, right? And we've seen folks like, maybe a good example is like Tiny Wood Stove, who is a WooCommerce store. They started like literally just a blog with WordPress, basically, you know, a couple who had, recently quit their corporate jobs and went on like the sort of nomad life and started a blog about it. Long story short, their, you know, blog about their like nomad life and like how to heat their camper has turned into a manufacturing business. And now they now sell these tiny wood stoves. And I forget now how big of a company they are, but you know, they scaled beyond just the original founders. And, you know, so I think, you know, to answer the question more directly, WordPress is such a huge part of that kind of customer acquisition channel for WooCommerce, right? As people enter WordPress, even just with sort of a creative idea, again, even maybe just a blog, because of the flexibility of WordPress, you know, that idea can very quickly turn into, or blog very quickly turn into an e-commerce platform or much more than that, right? And so that sort of community building is still an important part of what we do here, even in the kind of the B2B space. It's really like engaging the agencies, web hosts, everybody in our ecosystem are all towards the same goal of growing WordPress sure, and WooCommerce
sure.
adoption.
Sure.
And so, you know, they're probably, you know, it'd be interesting to kind of envision what like a worm life could look like for Woo. I think there's like, similar, you know, again, it's B2B, but we're all still humans at the end of the day and figure out the best way to engage those folks is,
One challenging question, I'm going to throw a challenging question at you because I'm just curious really more than anything is one thing that I've noticed is, you know, there's now a lot of e-commerce going through apps. This seems to be a thing that's occurring. So for instance, on Instagram, you know, Instagram, you can now shop through Instagram. This is relatively new. Now we have not been pushing into this heavily, although we're starting to dip our toe in. But like shopping through Instagram, shopping through TikTok, shopping through YouTube, like I don't know. Just talk about that. Like I'm interested in where you think that's going. And I mean, selfishly, because I'm interested in where that's going. And I don't know. Like it's an interesting development in the.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just the kind of embracing a multi-channel or omni-channel experience is certainly something that we hear a lot from our customers and that we very much want to support. We have great integrations with TikTok and Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, enabling our customers to leverage WooCommerce, but to still reach their own customers wherever they are. Right. So I think that's still a really important part of, you know, for most folks selling online, it should be an important part of the strategy, right? Like for you guys, whether, you know, it makes sense to try and sell your like, you know, more custom bespoke furniture through an Instagram may not make sense, right? But your more sort of simple, less complex products, right? Would make a lot of sense, I think, to reach that audience. And so I think that's very much, I mean, it's maybe like even antiquated to say that that's like the future. It's here now, right? And but I think it certainly we anticipate that that kind of multi-channel experience really proliferating over the coming years, but also believe that it's really important to own your brand and experience. And while you're leveraging these separate channels, you know, to obviously sell through them, but also leverage them as a way to bring those customers back to your own website where you own the data, own the experience, and can deliver exactly the kind of customer experience you want to.
You know, one of the things is like people, well, it's all so interesting, right? It's like the needs of a company and a brand seem to be so different than some sort of influencer sort of vibe, right? Like if I'm an influencer, what's interesting is, you know, my company sort of straddles these worlds, right? You know, because we are so online and that on that side of things, but, you know, like an influencer, I feel like I don't know if they care as much about that. I'm not sure. I don't know. I certainly do. Like my company does, right? And by the way, you know, when it comes to a custom table, you're right. I don't see how these apps currently would ever support that sort of thing, right? Like I am selling a customizable product that's very expensive. Our average transaction for our sort of medium level gaming tables, it's about $4,000 per transaction. Right. So this is a $4,000 decision someone's making. They're going to want to go somewhere. That's not a like, oh, I'm on TikTok, swipe to the right.
Yeah. Like scroll across that video on TikTok and be like, yeah, I'm going to make that buy.
Right. Right.
But at the same time, it's like if I see that while I'm in TikTok or Instagram or what, like that's this ignition, this moment, right? When it's like, that's beautiful. Where do I, you know, how do I find my way back to your space to start thinking about the decision.
Right. By the way, like, you know how I'm thinking about that right now is, you know, I think it used to be, you know, hey, I'm going to bring the people to the website in order to sell the product. My philosophy right now is when they are on TikTok or they're on Instagram or they're on YouTube and they see, you know, the goal of our marketing team right now is to get across the core functionality of that product, which ideally makes someone go, ooh, I want that, right? And then when they get to the website, add to cart, right? I'm not actually right now looking for the website to tell the story so much because I think that story is going to be told on social media.
Yes.
Right? I think when they're watching the TikTok or the Instagram, whatever the heck this is, right, they're going to have some sort of, they're either going to like it or not like it. And if they like it, you've sold them. When they go to the website, I actually want add to cart. I just want to decrease the friction. It's for me, the way I'm thinking about it right now is the website is not so much about telling the story of the product. They know the story from the media channels that they're on. That's where they learned the story. That's where they made the decision. My goal now is when they get to the website, low friction add to cart. I'm just throwing like, I'm not saying that's good advice. I think that's how I'm currently thinking about this
I think problem. That's exactly right. It obviously it depends on the types of you know store you're operating, who your customers are, but I think like for you all that strategy makes a lot of sense.
No, and again, it's different businesses are going to have different needs.
But learning about what's successful in any business can lead to learning about what's successful in your business, right? Like I think that's what's interesting about seeing it there. When you start seeing those loops, I hate to wrap. This has been tremendously interesting. I really appreciate Douglas your time to talk to us about Wormwood Gaming today. Anything else as a final before we wrap up, Paul or Travis? Anything that you would want to add?
I'll just reiterate your thanks. I really appreciate the time, Douglas. It's been really lovely to get to know you and the Wormwood team over the last few weeks and just learn a little bit more about the business. So thank you.
Yeah, no, and thank like I said, you know, my company really is a little slice of an American dream, right? It's we're manufacturing in America, selling domestically. And the only way we've been able to do that is by my company could not exist without the internet. Let me put it that way. My company could not exist without the internet, right? Between Kickstarter and then also, you know, you guys and our ability to actually make sales on a website, it actually is pretty nutty. It's actually pretty miraculous. And I think it's sometimes it's good to just sort of take stock of that reality. It's like, I don't know, there's 150 employees in Massachusetts and Pennsylvania that are, you know, their paychecks come through your company essentially, right? You're the middleman for that. And so I don't know. So thanks to you guys, and especially Travis and his team to help us dig out of the problem that we were having. So
we love hearing these stories so much. You know, our mission is very much to democratize commerce. And this is, you are such a fantastic example of that.
Cool. All right. Well, hey, thanks for the time, guys. It was fun. And yeah, so cool.
Well, I'd like to thank host Jay, as he brought in Travis, Paul, and Douglas for a very fun and insightful conversation. Stay tuned to Inside Woo as we bring more behind the scenes from WooCommerce.com. Until the next time.